Ladies and gentlemen, All About Reality is back. We are at the precipice of a new All About Reality feature jumping in on the contract extensions for the new year. I'm with my friend and fellow traveler on this RSO road, Matthew Goodwin. Goody, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well. Good to be here. I want to apologize to our listeners. It's just been a really hectic year. Just too much adulting, I think. And so I, you know, look forward to a chance to talk, talk football with you, even if we don't get to do it as often as we used to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be back on the horse, and I hope it becomes the case that we could do so more frequently. Who knew that you getting like a real person job, you know, like growing up, taking care of your family, like it's, I feel like I'm in Goodwill Hunting, you know, I'm happy for you. Like go do it. All joking aside, we do have an array of topics available to us now. Why don't you kick us off? There's plenty to be said. We're going to go hard for our listeners on this one and try to clarify some things as people have to start making decisions about players they're going to pursue, what they're going to do with their teams. Now that they're, you know, three games into a season, you start to shape up like, oh, should I be selling some of my pieces that I was dubious about? Am I a contender? How are my points looking relative to the league? We usually take a look for our listeners and try to get them where they need to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think like what I want to lead off with is kind of, you know, what I called it is the Achilles epic comeback. And it's kind of a tale of two cities in this case. I mean, you can even talk ACLs and just how different teams manage players coming back from injury and philosophy and everything else. But what and I don't know whether it's sustainable or not, but like, first off, like just talking like lead just about James Robinson, who I think in a lot of redraft leagues and even in RSO, because he was undrafted free agent, sometimes you can get him on a cheap contract going in. If your league life cycle is a few years old, like he may be a pretty valuable piece on your fantasy roster right now. Someone that you didn't really want to trade low on because he wasn't costing you all that much cap space, perhaps. And now is just a potentially pretty big chip or asset still in your kitty, you know, like you thought you were playing with house money before. And now like he's running back three, at least in the pod league. And the question really is, I mean, he and Cam Akers both came back from similar injuries. Cam Akers is further along, you know, in terms of like being removed from his injury. I mean, Sterling Shepard, receiver, came back from the injury, unfortunately tore his ACL in the turf monster that, you know, on Monday Night Football, and he was getting decent volume for the Giants. So I guess the question really is like Robinson versus Akers. Do you think there's any, like, what the foundation to Robinson's success is coming back from his injury? Is it, you know, more that he's kind of like a workman like running back who doesn't have great like agility or speed or anything else, whereas maybe someone like Cam Akers there's a little more finesse and wiggle to his game, or how the offense is using these guys or what, because, or, you know, scheme even. I'm really interested in like what's going on with those two. And then, you know, then on, you know, flip side, you have a team like Baltimore who, you know, albeit like, well, even Baltimore, like talk Baltimore and even the Giants, now you see Saquon with some, and we can get to Saquon later, I think, but with some serious burst and juice back, it looks like, and like whether Baltimore is kind of bringing along J.K. Dobbins slowly and what that looks like. So I'm just kind of curious about the running back position and injuries and you know, how teams are managing that and what that means for RSO and fantasy in general.
Well, I think the injury is one piece of the puzzle that you laid out very well right there. The other piece, right, is that if you were going running back in the first round this year, if you were going hero running back or robust running back, you're kind of in a regrettable spot. Those guys aren't performing to the degree that the wide receivers are in comparable draft capital, in comparable contracts that are being given out. And you and I have long pounded the table on this podcast that if you're going to gamble a big contract in RSO on a running back, it better be a one-year one. It better not be a long-term one. And now those of us that are heavily invested in Jonathan Taylor, for example, and Christian McCaffrey, to name the two biggest names, we're real nervous about Christian McCaffrey for sure. Even despite being 25 years old, he's got that quality. Yeah. Like, right. Like, it's not great. But to the,
I'm throw injuries aside at this point, I'm worried about the offense.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm worried about the offense in Indy. Also, I'm worried about a lot of offenses. And then also, like, there's one other thing I just want to make sure I don't forget, get it as part of this conversation. But like, I think that, you know, one of the fallacies of the fantasy football Twitter community and everything in the fantasy community in general is that experts are always pounding the table at the running back position, like just talking about pass catching volume. And to me, that's the thing that's most volatile. Like as well, and I'm curious what you think about it. But like, you know, you see like the Austin Ecklers of the world, and everything else, and McCaffrey, and you know, some of that may be quarterback or situation dependent. But it's just like, you know, I think that chasing the pass catching running back is kind of fleeting. Whereas the certainty of outcomes when you're chasing the Derrick Henry, James Robinson, Nick Chubb types is seemingly way more predictable in terms of outcome and maybe even now like higher floor.
It is upsetting to hear our elite running backs and ones that we tend to like as players and runners and talents being characterized as floor plays. But this is what the heart of your injury question is. And I think this is true for all of our listeners, right? The reality is now with the 17 game season that running backs always had more injury volatility prior to this, but now we're starting to see the added boogeyman of load management, the added boogeyman of touch management within the course of a game. And so whereas before we could count on any number of running backs, including like the Aaron Joneses of the world, to see an enormous receiving volume. And I think that's, to your point, what we're asking about here. I'm not so sure in a world where we see Marquise Brown get 17 targets this past weekend, and we see the Sun God get just targeted as much as he can handle by Jared Goff. Now we're starting to see, hey, in this new NFL, we're seeing a real paradigm shift where it's no longer, we can no longer count on running backs to be the touch leader on their team. And that's what we could count on before. And that's why people like Chubb, people like Henry, despite not having the very obvious advantage of more points per touch that comes from being a pass catching running back, they're just significantly out touching the guys that we thought we could count on, like the Travis Etienne's of the world, which brings us full circle back to the brilliance of your original question. Those three running backs, James Robinson and J.K. Dobbins and Cam Akers, I think in the offseason, people had them pretty clearly, Dobbins, Akers, James Robinson, a distant third, right? Like it was costing right. you nothing to get James Robinson. And would you be shocked if that was completely inverted at this point? I will tell you, Goody, I still have them. I just think you can airdrop J.K. Dobbins into the way Baltimore's playing right now. I think Lamar Jackson is the clear-cut MVP of the NFL right now. I think if he comes back healthy, and it's still a giant if, but it's a gamble I'd be willing to take in Dynasty, not seasonal.
Right, and in fairness, he did have the triple crown of ACL tears.
Exactly.
And everything else. And not, you know, we've talked about this on the pod before, that not all ACL tears are equal. And that's probably why you're starting to see Saquon Barkley, like, you know, a couple of years removed from that now, like look pretty dang explosive again.
Well, that's why I was glad you referenced Saquon. You and I mean, you pressed me on that last year and proved to be right. You were like, this seems ugly. This seems worse than just an ACL tear. And I was like, I had visions of AP dancing in my head. And I was like, no, he's a different kind of athlete. He's going to come back. And you were right last year. And then I, as I did my analysis this offseason, I'm like, you know, Goody was right, but this, he's had another year to heal. Like, I think he's back now. And that's where I'm at with Dobbins. I think you try to buy low if his when he comes back and he doesn't look like himself. I think if he's on a longer term contract, if he still has some rookie years left, if you can extend him for cheap, that's when you strike on him. You don't expect a lot this year. And oddly enough, I complimented you offline. You were like, Luke, take some speculative shots on James Robinson. We talked about it when we were both drafting. You were a couple rounds ahead in the fishbowl. And I was like, I don't know, man. I'm just out on Achilles guys injuries. They're different. Achilles. Yeah. I'm just out. I can't do it. And look, Achilles was undefeated other than who? Manny Sanders before this. And now, right. And like, who came back and played at a high level that was relevant for fantasy. I love that you were right about James Robinson. He's fast becoming a James Conner type. Like, you just don't bet against this guy's character. I love that he's balling out there. And he doesn't have the athleticism of Akers, sure. But did we just see him rip off a 50-yarder? I haven't seen that play yet this weekend. I just saw the box score.
I haven't seen it either. Cool. Yeah, but it seems like he's had some splash plays in games, and he's certainly running hard, and sure, the fantasy points probably go part and parcel with like the touchdowns a little bit. I mean, he's got three on the season already, but basically, yeah. I mean, it seems like his role in that offense is pretty intact, and to be honest with you, it's a pretty nice combination of skill sets between him and ATN also, because ATN just does some very agile, nice things, especially in the passing game and whatnot. So it's certainly helping. You know, Trevor Lawrence had a pretty big week last week from a fantasy point of view, and it's kind of fun to see what James Robinson is doing with also, you know, a good coaching staff, you know, as well.
Absolutely. So I do have to ask you, I want to toss it back to you. Do you have any confidence? I'll just put a period on that. Cam Akers, I'm still out on. I think if he has any more pop weeks, like, you should get out from under him if you can.
I'm kind of out on that whole Rams backfield, to be honest with you, the Henderson too. And I know I gave Bobby a little bit of crap of that, you know, Henderson's mediocre when he just made a trade for him or whatever. And in the pod league, I just don't trust that enough. It's like, you know, the piece of the Rams offense I trust and want is Cooper Kupp right now, and I'm just kind of waiting and seeing on everything. And to be honest with you, I like Higbee in that offense too. I think Higbee's a nice volume tight end at this point that, you know, you can certainly do worse than and probably have in a lot of leagues. So
absolutely, this year, right, is it does seem like the rise of those volume tight ends, right? The Higbees, the Everetts, the Tyler Conklins of the world are doing work for us. They really are.
Right. So. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry, you were in the middle of a question about.
Oh yeah, yeah. So when I kick it back to you, no, James Robinson. So this is my question for the listeners. He's one that I fall in love with these guys that have the character coming back. For contenders, what are we doing with him, right? Like, because he's probably on a real cheap contract. You can probably go get him if he's on a team that is not going to compete this year. And if you're a contender, like, he's a real nice piece for real cheap, likely in terms of actual salary on your team. What do you think about him beyond this year? Like, I mean, has he risen to like late first round value? If I'm like, look, I'm going to make my run, am I coughing that up yet to go get him as a contender in like consider our listener league?
Yeah. There's
like, that's 16 teams. James Robinson has his value is enormous in a league where you're starting that many players and that many flex spots. Like, it seems like he's actually in contention to go cough up a first to go get.
Right.
Are you at that point with him yet?
I think you have to be. Like, I mean, he's also like on a dirt cheap contract with his team. He's outplayed his contract with in real life. So like, hopefully the Jags, you know, just kind of see the effort and, you know, even if it's paying below what maybe a regular running back would make market wise, like who's produced like him. I think he's pretty valuable in a bunch of different facets. So I think potentially worth that first. I mean, you may want to see it another week or two. I wouldn't fault anyone with that, but what his cheap contract affords you to do still is just so much flexibility and like going swinging for something else. And that's where he's super valuable. Now, like going back to Dobbins for a second, I think Dobbins is like this offseason will be the year that you have to decide whether you're picking up a rookie option on Dobbins or not. And that's going to get pretty tricky. Like what you're going to want to see is, you want to see a couple signature games this year. You don't care when it is, but you want to see that if you're giving up transition tag dollars to Dobbins, you want to see kind of like the horse race aspect where he's coming on strong at the end or has, maybe a 3-touchdown, $150 game or something. And that's really like the data point you want to know that like, hey, he'll like pass this injury or you want to just see something pop on tape that you maybe you saw with Barkley like at some point like last season, even if the stats didn't back that up. So I think that's all like a really interesting dynamic. I think, if you're also looking for cheaper guy, like this is like so far through 3 weeks of the regular season, like the running backs that are like forefront of my mind are all these workhorse worker B type running backs right now, like James Robinson, Khalil Herbert. I mean, even when Montgomery gets healthy, Khalil Herbert's in the, that's a kind of a guy that like, I think you would have liked for cheap, and certainly a redraft league or play, spend your fab on him if you had the chance. And then like, even like Jamal Williams, like you watch Hard Knocks, you see, just kind of love the effort, the moxie of the kid. And he has real opportunity there, even in a timeshare of Swift. So like all these running backs are in some form of timeshare now based on load management, all those things you mentioned. And it's really just parsing out the ones that you think can, play the majority of the season for you and produce at a cheap clip so that you can, you can swing for the fences like elsewhere, I would say.
Let's talk swinging for the fences then. I can't wait to hear what you have for me next, but I want to ask you, and I want to talk through, you and I are kind of going in blind on this. We haven't talked about either of these players together before, offline or online, but two players for very different reasons that have been on my mind as of late, going very different directions. Amon-Ra, the sun god stepping up for Detroit in like, I always have affection for the lovable losers of the NFC North. There's not too many teams that the Vikings feel like a big brother to, but they always have 30, to the Lions.
30, yeah, 33 targets in 3 games. Okay.
Is he for real? Is he like a top 12 dynasty wide receiver in your mind, like people are calling him? He's a Twitter darling at the moment. His volume, target volume is there. He's got that quote, dog in him. We're seeing the memes of the x-rays of his chest. Like he's getting the buzz. Jameson Williams is waiting in the wings to come back at some point this season.
Ding ding ding. I'm glad you brought that up.
I mean, we kind of like Jared Goff more. You and I both have come around on him, yeah, a little bit. I still can't shake the old Hard Knocks where Jared Goff did not know that the sun rose in the one cardinal direction and set in the other. That still baffles me, right, for an NFL quarterback. But talk to me. That's neither here nor there. He now is throwing to the sun god. He doesn't know which direction the sun rises. He just has to drop it in on his boy.
Throw it into the sun, right?
Yep. Yeah. So talk to me. Are you on this team? Are you behind Amon-Ra? Has he merited all this like rising up into the same conversation as Michael Pittman and others at this point?
I mean, you like the volume, like certainly the slot receiver type role in the Jared Goff offense, either way. And I think that's regardless of Jameson Williams, who, by all accounts, I think can come off the injured reserve in another week or so. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the dynamic when you have a healthy Swift back plus Jameson Williams in that offense. I mean, that team scored no shortage of points so far this season against, 3 opponents. I'm a little hesitant to call Amon-Ra a star only because of what's behind door number 3 with Jameson Williams. Cause I do believe in Jameson Williams a lot. I think he's got a lot of physical tools. And speed and everything else. I mean, he may come along slowly. I think this year you really like Amon-Ra. I mean, especially you grabbed him in the second round of rookie draft, something like that. Great. If someone's willing to give you a superstar package for him, you know, especially if one of the guys coming back is some kind of receiver, you know, like the running backs I think are fleeting this year, like I said. So I'd be careful about what you're considering trades there. And then certainly from a draft pick perspective, if you're getting something that's perceived to be a top five draft pick in say next year's class, I would probably take that over Amon-Ra right now. But I'm also a fan of what he's doing.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And the follow-up question to that is, I've been tried to be transparent this year and make all my trades known. I haven't posted this one on Twitter, but your guy and our guy, Kyle English of CTO fame, he and I made a trade in the Writers League today. I don't know if you saw that go down or that come across your wire.
And I saw it for a quick second.
So here's what I did. I gave up my 8th overall rookie pick this year in a 10-team Superflex League. One, Kenny Pickett. This is why I went to Kyle, who is quarterback starved. He's starting like Geno Smith in a two quarterback league, but he has Mitch Trubisky. He's got some other great pieces. And I went to him and he's got Kyle Pitts. And I went to him with Kenny Pickett. And I went to him with a 2023 first, which by definition will be a top 10 and probably higher in a 10 team league. Right. And I said, and so he and I came to an agreement that Kenny Pickett and 2023 first, so two first rounders for Kyle Pitts, because Kyle Pitts has been a heartbreaking disappointment for his owners and has been Arthur Smith is getting much maligned in the Twitter world. He's getting mocked by announcers on the NFL. He's like, this isn't fantasy football. And people are pointing out that perhaps throwing to your best player would be a winning strategy in real football, having nothing to do with fantasy. All right, so this is where I'm at. I just did not have any Kyle Pitts. I was compelled by it. I have to say, this is one of those ones that after the trade went through, I didn't feel like a winner. I felt like this could go badly. This could go either way. Talk to me about where you land on that one.
I'm trying to remember if there's any other pieces.
There was not. There was like a 500K Zay Jones.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. I did see it come across like briefly when I checked my email today. I like the shot of it. I mean, it's decent upside. You've had a lot of draft picks in the last few years. So like the Kenny Pickett thing, I mean, he was QB4 on your depth chart, I think, or something of that magnitude. So I understand Kyle taking a shot there. I mean, it's a pretty good class. I don't remember if this pick belonged to you or to somebody else in the scheme, but like, let's peg it at 105, 106, like, you know, just like law of averages, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty fair trade down the middle, I think. Interesting time to try to buy Pitts, and there's upside there. You get a quarter, you know, you get CJ Stroud in there or someone, you know, another quarterback next year or something, or Desmond Ridder turns into the real deal or something, you know, you pair him with Drake London and you have something interesting. And plus, I mean, that could turn around this year just as mismatches happen, things like that. So I like that deal, you know, for you. I also can see why Kyle did it, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think Kyle and I are higher on Pickett than you. Like, we both like him more, which helped facilitate the discussion. Yeah. And I have to thank you. It was your maneuvering during the draft that landed me Pickett, because you jumped ahead of me and picked Olave, who I would have absolutely picked with that pick. So good work there. Yeah. So that's all I got. That's what I wanted to like. Those two players have been at the forefront of Twitter discussion. I thought it would give some merit into our thought process for our listeners.
Yeah, for sure.
So talk to me about where you're coming from. You had a couple more topics that we should get through. We still got time to play. So
let's talk about like some players that like maybe your stars that you're cautious about or players you're giving up on, quote unquote, finally, not finally. Like, I mean, this could be rapid fire. Like, even, I guess the first question, we've talked about him a lot. I don't want to talk about it too much, but are you finally, like, you know, pouring the last pile of dirt over DJ Moore's ascension? Let's start there.
I wondered if that's where you were going, and it is a hard question to ask. And to answer for me, because, for example, in that same listener league, someone came to me offering DJ Moore today, and I have Baker, and I want to believe in both of them so bad. Like, I want to lock them up and just stack them up and watch that light up a 16 team league. And I mean, obviously I still think he has flex value in a 16 team league, but even saying that out loud sounds like a concession, doesn't it? Like, I mean, what am I talking about? This was a guy that I had locked in as a top 10 dynasty wide receiver.
It's just really hard sometimes, just being on Twitter and you scroll through your feed, like, especially when you're not like engaging it that much, like, because I haven't had the time to, like I have in the past. And I just see these folks who are just like trying to will things, and these analysts trying to will things into existence, you know, on Twitter. So like you DJ Moore being one of them, Treylon Burks being another one. And I mean, maybe it's because the same five people keep popping up in my feed, and you know, a youngster from my alma mater, you know, 21 years old, seems to pop up in my feed kind of frequently. And he talks about the same five players all the time. But you know, Breece Hall's shown some things to me, like in the pass catching volume has been interesting because of some game scripts that the Jets have been involved in. But like DJ, okay, so it's DJ Moore, and then it's like, okay, are we done with Allen Robinson? Like, I think I'm done with Allen Robinson, you know. Yeah. Like, love the player, but I just, you know, some of it is also maybe potentially effort, like quarterback aside. Like, I mean, whatever you want to say about Baker, I think there's some issues with, you know, I've read some things about the issues with DJ Moore actually getting open also. So, you know, and you cherry pick the right videos, you can see causes, you know, for and against, like the quarterback or the receiver, if you find the right data point or the narrative that you want to believe in. So those two are the first ones about giving, you know, potentially giving up. There's so many to choose from this year. I mean,
yeah, let's do your idea. Let's go back and forth. You give me five names, I'll give you five. Our listeners will get to hear. We'll just be very simple. At cost, at where they're at in their RSO life cycle, are we in or out? Are we a yes or no? Fine. So DJ Moore, I'll still say yes. I'm still buying him. I'm not paying as much, but I'm still a truther. I'm going down with that. I'm going to get mauled by that Panther at the end of my days, I think. So yes. So the one I'll toss back to you then, you just mentioned him, Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I'm out.
Okay.
Rams offense or not, I'm not seeing, like, he wasn't necessarily a huge separation receiver anyways. And I just think that offense is just supporting some other concepts. I don't know that you're going to accurately be able to pick the weeks that you're going to get them. I think in a 12 regular 12 team RSO league, I think you just have a couple other guys you trust more.
All right. We are in, that's a consensus there. I am out as well at cost at the contract, but he's at his RSO life cycle. All right. Who you got for me?
Russell Wilson.
Still in.
By the way, God, is he cheesy at this point? Like, it's not just him leaving Seattle. I don't know, man.
Actually, you saying that is part of my whole psychological, I am a cheesy person in real life, right? Like, I'm like more earnest than I am. I like vacillate between extreme earnesty and earnestness. And
some sincerity to it. This just seems
Well, this is the thing though. I think he is so off-putting to so many smart people who are often not like that. That it actually is creating a buy window. Like, for example, I mean, you have him in the pod league, don't you? Like, you're suffering through it in the pod. In the writers league. Yeah. Like
last year a contract, but yeah.
At cost, right? I mean, this is the kind of thing. that we should be talking, because I think I'm still more compelled by him than you. I should be coming to you about that. So yes, I'm still in on him. You're out on him at this point?
I think so. The cost, like a legacy cost, is high. And the problem I'm having with this is, and it's becoming more apparent to me, that like the Pete Carroll school of thought with him is kind of coming into play a little bit, at least philosophically, to win games. Like what you see in Denver, fine. He is, I like Judy, like Sutton's fine, like whatever. But he's got two really good running backs, but they're letting him try to cook. And you see what's happening with that. It's like what made Russell Wilson so good in Seattle, even when the defense was phenomenal, was just the efficiency, the hyper efficiency, touchdowns, the ability to play action, pass, and throw those sweet rainbows out of the air, deep balls to, you know, receivers like Tyler Lockett or, you know, Jermaine Kearse or whomever. Like, and he can do that in Denver if they're willing, if Nathaniel Hackett has like the huevos to basically set that up with the run, you know. And maybe the offensive line's not that good, but I think what you're seeing right now is just that, you know, like somebody giving the keys and a big contract in real life to a guy who, you know, is aging a little bit, like not as big of a threat to run himself anymore. And, you know, and I think that can be like end really badly if the team doesn't get ahead of like what, you know, what its strength and identity is on offense, especially in a division that, you know, like, if you take the running back, take fantasy aside, just real life, like, you know, like running backs, for instance, you'd argue that Denver's running backs are the best running backs in the AFC West. And, you know, to win, keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands, out of Derek Carr's hands, out of Justin Herbert's hands, they're going to have to lean on the run to win those games in some aspect. And I don't see Hackett being the person who's gonna like tell Russell Wilson no right now on that, and that really scares me from a fantasy perspective, and just a right, you know, like getting towards, you know, year four, year five of that contract, if he even gets that, just being bloody.
Well, you're half right on that. You and I have, we both abhor, and I think any reasonable person is wildly disappointed in whatever it is that Hackett thinks he's doing as an NFL head coach. I'm not often the armchair analyst there. I don't know the analytics on what to go, but it has been abysmal. Like, it's been really, really pathetic to watch him struggle and do what he's doing. So yes, whatever that is bad. I hope you're right that he doesn't have the fortitude to stand up to Russell Wilson, because the division that you just discussed is precisely the reason why I think you can't rely on the running backs. At some point, I trust the talent of those quarterbacks, and I'm watching the Chargers like just get decimated by injury, like their defense, right? They lost Bosa. Like, we all wanted to be part of that division in fantasy before the year began. We wanted to chase those points. We assumed shootouts were coming. I don't see that as totally different yet. That's why I'm still there. All right, I'll take it somewhere a little bit closer to home for you. At cost, you have to buy real high on one of your favorite players in the league right now. Nick Chubb, are you paying what it's going to take to get him in a landscape where running backs are disappointing? He has been a shining light. He's been awesome. Are you willing to pay the piper to go get him at this point?
If my team's good, yeah, I am. I mean, I don't know what else this guy has to prove at this point. Like, I mean, he seems to outperform like his ADP, you know, how, like considering health or whatever, everything else, like Kareem Hunt, whatever, like, you know, if the guy does it in 15 carries a game. I mean, I was getting frustrated in that Steelers game as a Browns fan. I was like, okay, Browns have been in the red zone twice in the second half, and it took a fourth down at the goal line for Chubb to be in the game. So of seven plays, you know, inside the 20 in the second half, like Chubb got one carry. I think it was only in the game one of those seven plays. And that's really frustrating as a Brown, you know, as a Browns fan, and really a Chubb fan too, because I just think that the talent, like, you know, just one of the best pure runners in the league, that gets the extra yards, just works hard, has that burst to hit to the next level. And, you know, I don't care if he's catching half a pass a game, like, you know, he's just that good.
Excellent. All right. Who you got for me? I agree with you. I trust your Browns analysis. We've always been lockstep on Chubb. So I'm with you there. I like that analysis.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about another guy that, let's just assume Dak Prescott's coming back, but 34 targets so far this season. Is CeeDee Lamb ever going to reach the stratosphere that we, you know, that people think he belonged in? You know, people are pretty high on, like, Justin Jefferson, Judy, and that, you know, especially when Justin Jefferson had the rookie year and last year, and thinking, like, okay, this is year three of CeeDee Lamb. Has all the tools, arguably probably should have been the first receiver drafted in that class. And you know, the Raiders went a different direction. You know, that's been documented. Like no Amari Cooper, no Gallup right now either. Like, you know, you see the good and the bad. You see the one-handed catch for a touchdown on Monday Night Football. You see a wide open drop of something that, you know, was clearly a big play at a minimum touchdown, most likely. Like, do you think is this guy like the next Devontae Adams, or is this guy like just kind of, you know, the next Plexico Burris?
Those are two names that I was happy to have on my team at different points in their careers, for sure.
Right.
And I do think he probably has, the proof is in the pudding that he's closer to Plexico Burris at this point.
And I'm not knocking Burris as a, like, anything, like, he was a good NFL player and a pretty decent fantasy option, but someone who also was drafted high, who, you know, is expected to dominate and never did, I guess.
Yeah. And I do think that is probably, if you were pressing me, that's the most likely outcome. I will say this, just because of the high profile nature of the team, the high profile nature of the expectations that you just detailed, I do think this is a good buy window for him, depending on who the GM is in your league, only because if he pops at all, and it might be even a little bit too late because of the high profile one-handed catch. And we know that those things are very visceral. They leave, like, big impressions on us in island games and stuff. But if he's still out there and the GM is trying to get off him at cost, like, I'm not even saying you're going to get a discount, I think now would be a good time, because the minute he strings together two good games, you know he's going to be treated that you can trumpet him like, this is the guy that we thought was the next receiver right after Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp in drafts, right? Like, he was right beyond that Diggs Devontae tier. Like, he's ready to jump over them. He's 6 years younger. Come get him. And I think you can dangle that in front of GMs in your league. And so, yeah, so I would go get him now, because even if I don't believe in him, even if I like your analysis that he's closer to Plexico Burris, I think there's still going to be a sell window where we treat him like the elite player that he may never be.
Okay. Nice. No, this has actually turned into a pretty fun segment, I would say. Did you have anyone else, or do you want to transition to, like, the last topic we had?
I do, only because I like your Seattle analysis. It has been confusing for lack of clarity all season. And I'm going to give you the two for one. I had some faith and invested some contracts in both Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker in this offseason. Are either of them appealing to you seasonally or as a long-term investment in RSO moving forward?
That's such a tricky question. Walker, probably long-term moving forward. Yes. I think just shows some tool. I mean, it's like a four-headed backfield right now from a redraft perspective, added to which you're dealing with the potential game script things going on. If you know, their defense is giving up a lot of points or anything else, like, in a perfect world, what they want to do is run the ball a fair bit. And in games that they're successful in doing that, say it's, you know, a rainy fall day in Seattle, you know, you could see a guy like Penny have 25 carries for 140 yards and two touchdowns. the question is, like, are you going to be able to figure out when that is? I mean, first and foremost, like, send me a note, be like, hey, Goody, what's the weather like? You know, that, like, are Seattle home or away this week? Like, honestly, like, that, you know, who's their opponent? Are they playing the last week they played the Falcons. Like, to me, those are, like, the type of situations that maybe you could sneak Penny into a flex in a league and he can do right by you. But, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to figure out that backfield when it matters or in the right week, unless some injury happens or that, you know, that defense, the Seahawks defense becomes better than we both think they will be. And then that they will, you know, stay in games and establish the identity that they want, you know. But, like, I mean, make no mistake, like, Geno Smith is, you know, you may think of him as a game manager, but, like, they're giving him the keys to do some things, too, there. But, like, long-term, you know, you get a quarter, you know, the quarterback of the future is not on this team yet. You get, you know, you pair Walker with that, years 2 through 4, whatever, and, you know, that could look pretty nice.
Fair enough. I think you and I are in accord on Rashad Penny. I took those swings on him. I'm happy I did so. But, like, you make some gambles with contracts that you have and cap space you have available. It didn't work out, and I'm fine moving on for what I can get at this point. And
right. I mean, if he's on your Scott Fishbowl roster of 22 players, you keep him on and hope that he, you know, hope that something happens. He's, you know, more valuable on your bench than he is, you know, on someone else's team.
For sure. And Kenneth Walker, I think, because it's not foreseeable to me and because I don't like playing that what-if game, I think I'm out too at cost. I think I would try to package him, especially if I was a contender, right? I would try to package him to a GM that it would be appealing to have him and to wait for those to speculate on that and try to land a more surefire contributor this year.
Right. The hard part is, like, he may not have the usage this year for someone who is speculating on him to feel comfortable in speculating on him. So it depends. It's really the psychological profile of the person you're dealing with.
Yeah, you're right. And you have to wait for that seasonal inflection point that you and I always talk about when people really realize they're out of it and they're just trying to get out of their 1 year assets. Like, at that point, that's when you can say, okay,
right.
Like, all right, look, like, Nick Chubb is, you're not going to franchise tag him.
Like, right.
Here's the second overall pick from this year's rookie draft. You think that's a fair bet, you know? So, like, that's a, Yeah, man. All right. I like it. I like that. I hope that was helpful to our listeners. So
Okay. Let's finish on one topic. We've never talked about this on air and like, I kind of go both ways on it. And I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are. Like, you know, you see enough on Twitter and I love the analysis of it because, like, people are actually watching the tape and measuring these types of things. Like, the air yards or the yards run so far. It says, like, so far, like, Elijah Moore's run, like, 2,000 yards worth of routes I saw, I think, the other day. Like, but the breakout narrative that comes along with that, the question is how much you buy into that. I mean, people who have made a living in this game, you know, like the Evan Silvas of the world, you read his matchups and, you know, and things of that nature, like, sometimes he really hammers these things and gives you a good insight into maybe for DFS or for just a guy that you should be in your lineup the next week based on things. And then some of these other players, like, you're like, okay, well, you know, they have the targets, they have the air yards, but, like, when's it going to materialize into something real? So, like, you know, like, for instance, those people, like, from an air yards perspective, in week 2, Chris Olave had a ton of air yards against the Bucs. He had, I think, 13 targets. He didn't really connect. Maybe, you know, had 4 or 5 catches for, like, 70, 80 yards. I don't remember what his stats were exactly, but he, you know, seemed to be an air yards darling in that week. And, you know, then the next, okay. Yeah. No, he had 5 catches on 13 targets for 80 yards. A long of 51. He also had a fumble. So, you know, the question is, like, most of the quote unquote smart money or the sharp money was on, you know, Olave potentially having a breakout in week three against Carolina. I mean, it took Michael Thomas being hurt and Jarvis Landry as well. But Tre'Quan Smith had a pretty good game too. I mean, Olave had 9 catches on 13 targets for 147 yards, a long of 49 against the Panthers. And, you know, so if you had him, you know, if you took that leap in week three of your lineups, like against, you know, some similar type guys, maybe you arbitraged on that. But then again, if you took the same leap with a guy like Elijah Moore, who's been peppered with targets and just hasn't, you know, really like hasn't seemed to have the chemistry of Flacco this year. So it's pretty much like getting 4 for 48 a game on, you know, 10 plus targets. Does get, you know, Zach Wilson this week. Like I guess the question back this week, I guess the question is like what you know, what's real versus not real with some of these guys, like, you know, especially when they're younger too, like a Treylon Burks type or anyone else, or even like whether you want to extrapolate Hollywood Brown's, you know, 17 targets or whatever last week and what you do with that. So I just think that's like an interesting thing to put a bow on, like, and talk about to finish up this pod.
I'm a believer in the descriptive analysis of air yards to tell us what kind of receiver is earning targets. And let me qualify that for you. And to be clear, I do think when you look back with hindsight, air yards tells you an awful lot about what you want to know about a receiver. And it's a tool best used at the end of the season to kind of target receivers for the upcoming season. For example, it would not have misled you this year If you focused on the air yards leaders from last year. You would have seen a name like, probably no surprise to you, Justin Jefferson at the top of the list, Cooper Kupp in the top 5, even the Darnell Moody's of the world, top 15, which would have been the closest thing to a miss. I am a fan of using that because I think it's a little bit more sophisticated, because it reveals to you, not only did the wide receiver get open enough for a quarterback to earn their trust to throw it to them, but that the quarterback has the significant enough rapport to pull the trigger and throw that ball to them, like the expected air yards there. So I think it's like a more elaborate.
Is that because you want the 16 games or 17 game sample size? Is that why you like that? Or is it something else?
It is. In fact, I want because there's so much, it's just because we have such a small sample size with over 3 games, for example, I would rather look back on that. And I would say, like, look, as good as anything midseason, why not take a shot? If you can't see any like significant variable coming up, I would be like, I was like, all right, I like this for Olave. I'm going to be, even in managed leagues, I started putting him in my lineup because of the description of the situation that you just described. I was like, okay, I'm going to trust these minds that are predicting this. And I think they're right. They've watched these games. They've tracked these routes. So yes, I am on team. I believe that particular analytic more is descriptive, right? Like more is hindsight. Like now that we have 3 games in the book, I'm like, yep. Okay. I'm going to trust you, because I think the best analysts I've heard are not trying to be predictive with it. They're not trying to say that this will necessarily translate to X. All they're saying is this is volume that you can trust and you can follow that volume. You and I both tend to do that, and we've had great success with that. And I think this is a more sophisticated way of chasing targets.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather, you know, being a process versus outcome person, like, I think is important, but at a certain point, like if your process is telling you to start Elijah Moore like 6 weeks in a row and he has 4 for 48 each week in spite of the air yards, then like at a certain point, you kind of have to pivot also.
Sure. So let me, and this is a great note to end on. You did it well. The receivers at the top of that list are not necessarily ones that are winning weeks for us yet. It's Chris Olave, as you said, after 4 weeks is the top of it. Deontay Johnson is number 2. Cortland Sutton is number 3. A name that we've already belabored and discussed on this podcast, CeeDee Lamb, is 4. Jaylen Waddle 5, AJ Brown 6, Marquise Brown 7, Davante Adams 8, Terry McLaurin 9, and then DJ Chark and Cooper Kupp rounding out the top 10.
I don't. And think where are you looking at this for? Just so our listeners, like, if they ever, you know,
Very good. I am looking at our friends over at FTN Fantasy have this on that you can sortable, like a sortable list by this. I went to filtered it by wide receiver, filtered it by air yards. So you can go take a look there. Nice. This is the FTN's proprietary air yards tool. So go take a look at that. And so, yeah, so like I don't mind, right? Because that gives you a little bit of an advantage. I don't think the DJ Chark owner is like clinging tightly to DJ Chark at this point in the year. Why not go take a look at him, right? Like he's going to be right. A guy for a potentially top 10 air yards guy. We've talked about how Jared Goff's airing it out. The Sun Gods beat up this week for like he got hurt at the end of that Viking game. And so, yeah, man, like I think there's something to be said for chasing air yards. And there's a lot of names on that list that you and I like. And I think this is a way of quantifying perhaps ways that we have not always quantified it in the past.
Right. But the hard part is like picking amongst the ones that have like the rapport and the relationship with the quarterback that like can turn it into production too, versus the guys who are just always going to be on that list because people are taking the shots, but the efficiency or the output doesn't necessarily match it. So it's like, you know, guys like Chark and, you know, sure, buy low, but like at the same time, you could probably call like lump Chark and Cortland Sutton in similar categories, yet the cost to acquire Cortland Sutton, you know, is much higher. But in essence, this kind of proves that maybe they're the same inefficient receiver or something.
Absolutely. And you're right, that as a GM you have to take into account the cost of the like both for the salary this year, but as you say, in any league that we're talking about.
I mean, even Davante Adams, like he's yep. way less efficient than he was with Rodgers at this point. So, you know.
Yeah, and you're right. We've never talked about efficiency stats. That might be a discussion for the future as well. Whether or not you and I trust the tale that efficiency stats tell us at the wide receiver position, at the running back position. Do we like, I mean, hyper efficient tight ends are usually like league winners relative to their position, right? Like the ones that like that.
Right. But then, yeah, but those are hard to predict. So it's like, yeah. Sure. Like I think the lesson for our listeners is first, like definitely like targets plus air yards equal good, basically
absolutely.
Is to start with like if you're going to do any analysis on it, anything with that. And like, you know, in the off season, when you're nerding out, like I think, the people who do it the best, you know, in terms of anything, like the reception perception stuff that Harmon does is great. The air yard stuff that like Herms Meyer or whatever, like, you know, like that type of stuff is all good. But that's to me more like in off season type things, and in season, you just kind of want to be tracking these things and try to pluck the efficiency a little bit too, just to not keep like, you know, making the same bad decision over and over again. And then I know we don't really talk start sit all that much or anything else, but like, you know, the circumstances with which you start a DJ Chark like very differently, like in, you know, in the 16 team league, I'm forced to basically start him every week. And, you know, in a 10 teamer, he probably wouldn't see the fake field for me.
Indeed, man. Well, thanks a lot, Goody. Welcome back, listeners. Thank you for sticking with us in our mini hiatus here. We are going to be, speaking of efficiency stats, we were resolving to do our best to be more efficient and get these comments out to you, especially with fun stuff like contract extensions coming up in our league. So, Matthew Goodwin, where can our listeners go looking for you if they want to chat you up and yell at you for not being online with your usual gregarious self? Like, where can they go after you?
On Twitter, they can find me at MattGoody2, and you know, I'm still checking it and everything else. It's just not as frequent.
Sounds good. And this is Luke Patrick at Fantasy Doc Ock, and this has been another episode of All About Reality.